Chief Judge Santel and the panel, my name is Stephen Goldblatt. I'm a professor at Georgetown University Law Center, and I was appointed by this court as an amicus curiae in support of Mr. Kamerling. With the court's permission, argument today will be presented by Jeff Kossoff, a law student at Georgetown University Law Center, who is appearing in conformity with the rules of this court.
Professor, if I could just indulge myself 1 minute, since you and I are survivors of falls, I am glad to see that you are up and about.
Thank you so much, Judge. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good morning, counsel.
May it please the court. With the court's permission, I would like to confine my argument today to the issue reached by the district court, whether Russell Kamerling complied with the exhaustion requirements of the Prison Litigation Reform Act. And if the court has any questions about the other arguments, could ask, or I will leave that to the written briefs. Russell Kamerling complied with the exhaustion requirements of the Prison Litigation Reform Act because no administrative remedies were available for Mr. Kamerling. The district court therefore erred in dismissing Mr. Kamerling's complaint. The Supreme Court has stated that exhaustion is only required when the administrative officers have the authority to provide some relief. If I may quote the Supreme Court in 2001 from Booth v. Turner, the court stated that without the possibility of some relief, the administrative officers would presumably have no authority to act on the subject of the complaint, leaving the inmate with nothing to exhaust.
Is this a futility argument?
No, this is not a futility argument. And through
distinguish it from a futility argument, please, counsel.
Futility was actually seen in Booth, in which the plaintiff wanted monetary damages, but there were other forms of relief that were available. In Mr. Kamerling's case, the defendants have not pointed to any relief that would be available through the administrative process. And that is particularly important given the Supreme Court's ruling in Jones v. Bach last year, where they stated that exhaustion is an affirmative defense and it is the burden of the government to demonstrate that there is some authority in the administrative process to somehow provide relief to the prisoner's complaint. And throughout the record in the district court and in its 31-page brief to this court, the government has failed to point to a single administrative remedy that is available. And in fact, it's the government's position that there is no religious freedom RFRA exemption to the DNA Act, as it is stated to this court and the district court, stating that there's a compelling interest in least restrictive means. So unless the government can point to an administrative remedy that is available, exhaustion should not be required.
Well, how about if they collected the DNA sample, which is not actually what they collect? I mean, they collect either blood or saliva or urine or whatever. Is it in the record that your client would have had the same religious problem with his clothing before it was washed by the prison officials? Trying to get DNA from that or from his eating utensils, or I assume, and I don't know that this is in the record, that he had a blood sample drawn for HIV to be tested for that. Is it clear that he would have the same objections?
I don't know if the HIV blood drawing is in the record, but and he would have the same objection to any collection, analysis, and recording of his DNA. He's challenging any collection of
so
it, not just
blood,
the process.
It's not the blood sample?
No, it is not.
All right.
And as Booth made clear, the modifier available requires the possibility of some relief for the action complained of. And in the very recent case, Spears v. San Francisco in the Northern District of California, they applied both Jones and Booth to find that the defendant must demonstrate that some administrative action can be ordered. And again, the government has failed to do that. It has not pointed to a single administrative remedy. And that's especially important in the DNA Act because the DNA Act is non-discretionary, stating that the director of the Bureau of Prisons shall collect a DNA sample from each individual in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons. And the government has simply not stated that it would be willing to carve out a RFRA exception to that. And now, even if you were to find that an administrative remedy was available for Mr. Kamerling to exhaust, which we don't believe there is, the question for PLRA purposes is the collection, analysis, and recording of DNA a prison condition? And although the DNA may be taken at prison, it's a condition of his conviction, even if there was not any imprisonment. And the FBI analysis and recording is not subject to the exhaustion requirement because that takes place outside of the prison and is performed by people who are not prison officials. So even if you were to find that exhaustion, that there were some administrative remedies available, which the government has not demonstrated, we alternatively argue that this is not a prison condition.
What if we agreed with you on the exhaustion issue? What's going to happen next? What should happen next, in your view?
What should happen next? It should go back to the district court, and they should be able to gather facts. Each side should be able to present facts about.
We don't need to opine on any of those issues at this point.
No, because
is that totally accurate? We still have, at least theoretically, the prayer concerning the injunction. Restraint, temporary injunction.
Yes.
Part of the test on that is the likelihood of success on the merits, is it not?
Yes, that's one of the four problems.
So don't we have to at least take a fleeting glance or a peek at the merits of the cause in order to pass on that?
For that, yes, to weigh the four balancing problems, yes. But again, this is something for the merits of the case that Mr. Kamerling should have the ability to present evidence as to whether there is a substantial burden, and also to present his evidence about whether the DNA Act is the least restrictive means of meeting a compelling interest.
In terms of the merits, and I understand you don't want to go there and I don't want to belabor it, but they're not really asking him to do an awful lot. All he's got to do is stand there while they get a sample, right?
That is all he would have to do, yes. Mm-hmm.
Does that burden anybody's belief to just not resist the authorities?
Yes, Mr. Kamerling says it does substantially burden his sincerely.
I know he says that, but is there really a very good argument that that's much of a burden to just stand still while somebody else does something? I mean, they'd be the ones that were endangering their immortal souls, not him, if they're the ones acting. What does he care if they go to hell?
Well, Mr. Kamerling does lay out in more than 15 pages in his complaint why it is a substantial burden.
He's quite articulate. And
that is a factual determination the district court can make if this is
reversed. It was refreshing to have a pro se plaintiff who writes as well as he does. It was very good.
Well, thank you.
There's nothing in the record about his objecting to when he was fingerprinted or assuming that his blood was drawn for HIV testing. Did he object? There's just nothing in the record one way or the other. Is that right?
There's nothing in the record about his blood drawn for HIV testing. And fingerprinting, he actually suggests, could possibly be a less restrictive means of achieving the same purpose as the DNA Act.
But it doesn't.
That would be a factual determination that the court could make.
I mean, he's already fingerprinted.
Yes.
Yeah.
That determination is already made and made against. Congress has decided that fingerprinting does not meet the need, that you have to have DNA. But we couldn't do anything about that.
Yes. Unless there are any further questions.
I have a question. Is Kamerling the only appellant? Is that right? I mean, isn't he this Seiler fellow, the one who's about to get out, he didn't appeal, did he?
There are other appellants. As amicus, we're only representing, we're only amicus for Mr.
Did the others actually appeal?
No, that's still an open question right now.
So you're only representing, okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning, counsel.
Essentially two issues, exhaustion that has been addressed and also whether the complaint is fatally flawed. Before we go directly to those issues, I wanted to point out to the court that while we appreciate the creativity of amicus in advancing their arguments, we think that they raised a new issue that was not raised below, not a new argument, but a new issue contra tarpley, and that is that the complaint advances a claim that's somehow separate from DNA collection. That is, that they're somehow distinct from the collection that takes place in prison, a part of this claim that relates only to the analysis and recording of the DNA by the FBI. They even claim that the FBI is somehow a part of this lawsuit. However, the complaint clearly doesn't suggest that. We think a fair reading of the complaint certainly suggests that plaintiffs only wanted to sue the BOP and not the FBI. No part of the FBI is named either in the caption of the complaint or in the paragraph from the parties.
How do you deal with the exhaustion issue? I mean, what remedy, what relief is available?
I think the court's question is apt in the distinction made in particular between remedy and relief. First of all, this court's decision.
What administrative procedure is there out there that he hasn't exhausted?
Your Honor, he hasn't filed a request for a remedy, and that's essentially
what. What procedure exists for this kind of claim? In the Supreme Court's case, the government's representation of the Supreme Court in that case all indicate that there has to be some kind of relief available for the claim at issue. And I'm not aware of what kind of relief is available for this claim,
Your Honor,
in the administrative process.
First of all, we want to make the distinction between relief and remedy. Here, there is a remedy available. There is, pursuant to this court's decision in Jackson v. D.C., that the legal fact that the PLRA is subject to, or I should say the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is subject to PLRA review. And that's fairly clear. So there are a number of different things that could be done. We don't think that the record has been developed.
We won't name one of them.
You have to tell us what procedure could be employed in this case to get some relief through the administrative process.
He could have filed this request that the reviewing authorities could decide about the timing of the draw. They could explain to him, as the court explained in Booth v. Turner, similar circumstance where there's a request for monetary relief.
It's different from Booth. I mean, Booth, the court made clear, and the briefing makes clear, for example, the example that was given was an excessive force claim. This is in the briefs. If there was no relief available at all for excessive force claims, that would be an example where there was no remedy available. So here we have a claim of objection to DNA collection. What is there any relief available? Objecting to the relief, allowing the person not to give the sample? I mean, what's out there?
We think it's clear that Booth says that the specific relief requested does not have to be available. There can be other things outside of that.
Exactly. What are the other things here?
Those other things include the timing of the draw.
That
doesn't have
anything to do with it.
The nature of the draw.
That doesn't have anything to do with it. He's not objecting to the timing. He's objecting to the drawing at all.
Well, in this particular instance, his objection need not neatly fit the nature of the relief that's available. The question is there a potential remedy available, even if it's short of what it is that he's requesting?
Don't you have the burden on that issue?
We believe that in this instance, the burden is met by the remedy being available itself. That is, the law of this court establishes
what procedures? We don't have any procedures in the record.
In this particular instance, the particular procedures that are applicable for all prison administrative review requests, the filing of are the procedures that
I
are
I think
applicable.
What you're saying is even if there's no pre-existing procedure, they could do it ad hoc on the fly and provide some relief, but I don't even know what relief they could provide. I don't see it.
That's why I asked the question about if they used his utensils, if they used his clothing, if they used anything other than drawing blood, and he still has the same objection it's based on his religious belief, regardless of how it's taken.
Your Honor, we believe that in this instance the Bureau of Prisons had the right to review his claim, had the right to assess exactly what his objection is, because in this instance it looked like his objection was primarily in the heart of it was what use was going to be put to it, to the DNA once.
Now, the objection was also to the collection.
But the objection on collection had to do with, we believe in our reading of this complaint was, it wasn't that he wasn't going to subject to any blood draw, because he didn't say any blood draw. He only said this DNA collection, okay? And it was his concern about the DNA collection that gave him pause about potential misuse.
By the way, BOP is not lawfully entitled to give any relief, right?
Well, they do have some discretion.
Not to collect? They have discretion not to collect?
They have discretion as to when they collect.
But not to collect? Do they have discretion not to collect?
We don't think the DNA Act gives them that discretion not to collect.
So if that's the correct answer, then what remedy could possibly be available? His objection has nothing to do with timing. Don't tell me they could have changed the timing. What could they have done consistent with the law to grant him a remedy for his complaint?
Well, just so it's clear, BOP did not have to have the ability to say he doesn't have to give the DNA sample. They don't. Booth v. Turner says the specific relief requested.
Specific relief doesn't have to be, but there has to be some remedy.
Some remedy was
and
available.
I don't understand what remedy there is that had anything to do with his complaint. If he had an objection to the timing, then the ability to do something about timing would help you. But I don't see what the relevance is of your ability to change timing to his complaint about taking the sample at all.
Well, there are plenty of instances, and we think certainly Booth v. Turner is a prime example where the requested relief was for money, and they couldn't give money. And the court specifically said they don't have to be able to give money.
But they could do something else that was relevant to the complaint, right?
Yes.
I've heard you give us no example of what they could have done that was relevant to his complaint. His complaint had nothing to do with timing. Come in here and say, well, they could have changed the timing. So what? They could have done it on a Monday instead of a Tuesday. That would not have changed his objection.
Your Honor, in this particular instance, we believe that his focus was on what the ultimate use, at least part of his complaint.
That's right. If you made that admission, why are you coming in here and telling us that timing would have been a remedy? Once you've made that admission, you've taken timing out of the case, haven't you?
Well, I'm trying to get to another point, and that is that in this particular instance, they could have advised him about the limitations on the use. They could have reassured him about that. They could have
none of which had anything to do with his objection. If it's going to be DNA taken, then he believes the Antichrist is going to be coming. So.
But part of that claim, Your Honor, had to do with what, in fact, was going to be done with the DNA.
Mm-hmm. And if that was the sole claim, that would be different. But the claim was also to the taking.
Well, if any part of the claim can be exhausted here, it's clear they should have had a right to exhaust that. They should have had an opportunity to review exactly what his complaint was, and he didn't do that. And we submit to the court that Booth v. Turner clearly says that all of the relief requested by the prisoner does not have to be available, just the remedy. And this court's own decision of Jackson v. D.C. says that there is review. There is no legal impediment to review of a RFRA claim under the PLRA. So we don't understand how there could not be available a potential remedy, maybe not all of the relief he's requested, but here there's clearly review available for him. Factually and based on this court's own decision.
Suppose you did not prevail on the exhaustion issue. I'm trying to figure out what we do with the PI. Do you have a view on that?
Well, we think the court properly held that there was no likelihood of success on the merits and that there was no imminent harm affecting this particular appellant in this particular case. So we think that the court should to affirm the district court's decision on the PI. Moreover, there is also an issue about whether or not this particular claim, particularly as applied to the collection.
Before you get away from that, the district court did not specifically address the likelihood of success on the merits, did she? Or he, whichever it was, did they?
I think the district court ruled that it was not imminent and not no likelihood of irreparable harm.
But did not specifically address likelihood of success.
That.
Okay, thank you.
That's correct. In this particular instance, we further think that there is an issue about whether or not even given the nature of the claim essentially involves one in which they are saying, or the plaintiffs were saying, that there's some potential misuse of the DNA. That seems to be the heart of their claim. They've not, however, made any specific allegations that the FBI or anyone else is going to somehow misuse this DNA. There's only some possible use. So to the extent that this is a speculative claim, it's certainly not ripe for review by this court.
Not ripe? I don't understand that. Doesn't it have to occur very soon?
The collection does, but the idea that somehow some possible misuse will occur has
But collection is not part of the complaint here.
Yeah. Well, if as Amicus alleges that there is a separate claim that somehow involves impermissible collection, the only basis, or not collection, but impermissible analysis and somehow recording of this DNA, which involves, as the plaintiffs have set forth in their complaint, this potential that there would be cloning or stem cell research, as they have alleged in a complaint. Such claims are speculative. They have no basis in fact.
The claim is religious. It's his religious belief that it's, and we have to take that as sincere, that there will be, this will aid the coming of the Antichrist if they have this DNA evidence on everybody that they can use for the number of the beast and for have it engraved upon their hand for trading. And it's not misuse in a sense that you and I would normally recognize of being the FBI takes for criminal law purposes and it's used for cloning. This is the very use by government of this DNA is, in his RFRA claim, a misuse. So it really doesn't help any on the ripeness to say, well, they haven't misused it yet. His claim is based on the very essence of their having it, isn't it? Do I misread the complaint, or isn't that his complaint?
Well, it appeared to us that he went on for several pages about what...
Well, he went on ad nauseum.
Yes, about what potential misuse could be and how that presented a moral dilemma, which is certainly not the heart of his religious belief. So we think the heart of his claim relates to whether or not there's going to be some potential misuse of his DNA and not otherwise, and we think that claim is certainly speculative in the context of this case. For the reasons that we have set forth in our brief, we respectfully submit that the district court's decision to dismiss should be affirmed.
Okay,
thank you.
Counsel. We'll hear you in rebuttal. Mr. Kossoff, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What if the Bureau of Prisons had said, all right, we're not going to draw your blood? And as far as your client knew, that was the end of it. But they still had either the slides or whatever from the blood sample taken to test for HIV. Or let's say he did know that they still had that.
If it was any analysis of his DNA and recording it in a database, he would have the same objections to that.
All right, and how would he pursue that? How would he prosecute that if they said, we're not going to draw your blood?
He would still be able to challenge it. He names the attorney general in his complaint, and because prisoner pro se filing should be liberally construed, we would argue that that is a challenge against any FBI use of his DNA. So these claims are also relating to anything the FBI would be doing with his DNA in addition to the collection.
Regardless of where it
yes.
came from. Okay.
Yes. And I would just like to point the court just to an earlier question, to footnote 2 on page 1 of our opening brief, just stating that the plaintiffs filed a motion for class certification with this complaint that was denied as moot when the district court dismissed the case. The court therefore may therefore have jurisdiction over this appeal as to all of the putative class members. I just wanted to point that out.
Likelihood of success ultimately on the preliminary injunction, I think you have a good argument on exhaustion, but ultimately on likelihood of success, why doesn't the government have a compelling interest in collecting the DNA?
The government, that is something that if the parties were able to gather evidence, both would be able to present evidence, but Mr. Kamerling does state that there are other ways to meet this compelling interest. So
what other ways are there to meet that compelling interest?
He states real fingerprinting, for example.
Fingerprinting and DNA are two different means of identification.
Yes.
I mean, the court doesn't have to exercise but a certain element of ignorance, and there are many cases around the country where people are being freed on the basis of DNA.
Yes.
There are a great many more where their convictions are being verified on the basis of DNA, and that has nothing to do with fingerprints.
Yes.
Fingerprints don't fill that need, do they?
No, but also Mr. Kamerling's complaint, the government should at least be able to plead for RFRA reasons a compelling interest as applied to Mr. Kamerling, which it does not.
Why isn't he exactly like everybody else in that regard?
Well,
Congress has recognized a compelling interest, and the court can take judicial notice of a compelling interest. How is he any different than all the other convicts whose DNA will be taken?
That's something for the court to decide. But
no, it's something you're answering me right this minute.
But RFRA requires each individual, the analysis to be applied to the individual. And Mr. Kamerling is a nonviolent offender, first-time offender, so he may be different. And so he may not be who Congress had in mind when they require this database.
Congress expressly put it to all the felons, didn't they?
Pardon?
Congress expressly included all the felons.
Yes. Yes. Okay. The court has no further questions.
All right.
Thank you.
That case is submitted. Mr. Kusseff, we thank you for your representation of Mr. Kamerling, and we thank Mr. Goldblatt and the program for their continuing assistance to the court in matters of this kind. Thank you all.